Welcome to the Women in Power podcast, where women entrepreneurs share their stories, struggles, and accomplishments. We are here to listen to women in all walks of life, from starting a business to running million-dollar companies, from personal to business, and everything in between. Let's get started. Here's your host, Bree Logue.
Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Bree Logue, and this is the Women in Power podcast. Today, we have Kirsten Smith. Kirsten helps women reach their full potential, increase their self-confidence, and live a life they truly love. She works virtually with busy, goal-oriented women who want to maximize their time, lose fat, gain muscle, and improve their mindset. She also invests in real estate with her husband. They own 68 rental properties. She lives in Houston and is a mother to 4 young children, ages 2 to 9. And most recently, she is also a best-selling author, her book, Confessions of an Unhappy Housewife. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us a little bit about you. I know we went over a lot in your bio, but tell us what you're currently doing.
Oh, well, right now I am juggling between responsibilities, kind of building a business, making sure that, you know, I'm working with clients at a high level, getting them good results, and also trying to figure out how to homeschool my kids. That's probably the biggest challenge that I am facing right now. And I guess kind of figuring out how all the pieces of that puzzle work together.
Ooh, so you must be like really good with your time management.
Ooh, it could be better. It could be better. Definitely as I'm taking on more things, kind of putting them on my plate. You know, I think it's one of those things that is a constant evolution. As soon as I think I have it figured out, then the next thing comes along and I'm like, oh no, this requires now a different little pivot, right?
Oh yeah, especially as entrepreneurs, I feel like we're always like, oh yeah, you know, I finally get everything figured out. So let's start something new. Let's add something else to our plate.
For sure. We kind of thrive on the chaos, I think.
I think so too. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your book. I know it just came out a couple weeks ago. How did you write it? And, you know, how's it going so far?
It's been a wild ride. Never in a million years did I think I was going to write a book about me. My background was... you know, I moved to Texas to work on a PhD at Rice University, and it was in Arabic and Islamic studies. So I fully intended to go into academia and maybe write a book, but, you know, it was going to be a research-based book, not a book about my life and challenges and things that I've learned along the way. So that kind of came out of left field. You know, we're connected because of the Apex Network, and Ryan Stueman is a huge proponent of writing a book. And I remember, you know, we go up there once a month for Flying Fridays. And sometime last year, he is like, you guys have to get serious about writing a book. I highly recommend it. And I was like, man, he's not talking to me, right? Like, I've been a stay-at-home mom with these kids, you know, kind of working the back end of our businesses. So I thought writing a book is for somebody else in this room, right? Who's built a... you know, 7, 8, 9-figure business and has all this experience, valuable wisdom to share. This isn't advice for me. And then, you know, I think that was just kind of raging imposter syndrome that we all suffer from, right? Oh, yeah. Eventually, you know, I had enough people kind of follow up. And they were like, hey, when are you going to write that book? You're going to write a book? You should write a book. And eventually, you know, they wore me down. So I think the process, I had my own kind of head trash to work through when it came to actually sitting down and writing and being kind of vulnerable about it and being honest about some of the lessons I learned, some of the ways that I had kind of contributed to keeping myself really unhappy for years. That was kind of a hard thing to come to terms with. But, you know, I noticed I kept kind of kicking the can down the road a little bit. So my husband and I were doing the Live Hard program. We had finished 75 Hard, and I jumped right into phase 1. And so for one of my critical task lists every day, I put book drafting on there because I knew that if I didn't do it, I would fail phase 1 and I'd have to do those damn cold showers again.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, the cold showers.
Yeah, I did not want to do that. So I was very, very motivated. And, you know, I worked for 30 days straight and got basically the entire rough draft done and ready to send to the editor.
That's amazing. So you're super vulnerable in your book. How does your husband take it? Did you like tell him you're writing about it, or do you just like give him the final draft? And I was like, here you go. I'm going to give our whole relationship to the world.
Oh, he hasn't even read it. But I did talk to him. Because I'm very honest about some of the struggles that we had. And I think that, you know, we've gotten to the point now where in sort of the, like that dark pit, we wouldn't have felt comfortable sharing things, right? But being able to kind of make it through, get to that light on the other side of the tunnel, we, I think, can understand that we've learned a lot of stuff, right? We've grown in so many ways. We've grown individually, we've grown together, we've grown as parents, we've grown as business owners, as entrepreneurs, and we have a lot of lessons that can be useful for other people. Right. I've just hit this point in life where I was always kind of the youngest person in the groups that I'd run around in. And somehow I woke up overnight and I was now in the older group with all the people I run around in. I don't know how that happened, but just like blink of an eye, now I'm kind of like one of the old ladies. And I've realized that, you know, we have a lot of friends now that are, you know, they're younger than us. They're younger in their marriage and in their relationships. And, you know, maybe they're just now having kids, and being able to have a tool in their hand and know that a lot of the things, you know, when I was going through that, I felt like there were a lot of things that you weren't really supposed to say, right? Moms were supposed to sacrifice for their husband and for their kids. And you're not really supposed to prioritize yourself because that would be selfish, right? But then nobody tells you that you lose your sense of identity. You know, you forget who you are, all of that stuff. So I think being on the other side and knowing that like that's a message, and you can bring awareness to stuff that's bound to happen to some of these younger people that I now get to run around in, makes me really happy. And I think that, you know, he kind of feels the same way. I ran a few things by him. I'm like, hey, I'm going to talk about X, Y, and Z. Is that okay with you? He's like, oh God, okay, it's fine.
That's awesome. For sure. Like, I don't have kids, but your book is so relatable. Like, we all have those days where it's like, seriously, put your fucking socks in the laundry basket or I'm going to kill you. We all have those days.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And for me, it got way worse. I'm like, why do I hear you breathing? Why are you breathing like that? Stop. It just escalated. It started with the socks and then it went on.
So, in your book, you talked about how you went to school and you have your PhD. You have two PhDs, right?
No, I actually quit. So I wound up with two masters.
Two masters.
I did about 6 years in a PhD program, then had a baby. And I was like, I'm just, you know, we own a business and I'm going to raise some kids. I don't need a PhD to do that.
No. So I'm going to say you probably did not always know you wanted to be an entrepreneur then, right?
Not even close. I didn't even think this was really a possibility for me, even though my husband and I were building a business, you know, and I would step in there and I would coach classes or I'd deal with a lot of the issues that we were dealing with in our businesses, whether it was, you know, in the gym business or in the real estate business. I never thought of myself as the entrepreneur ever, right? You know how we have a tendency to put these labels on ourselves and kind of define what our roles are. I told myself my husband's the entrepreneur. He's the entrepreneur and I'm just the stay-at-home mom, which created so many kind of detrimental like mindset traps for me, right? It created my own garbage around money and finances. Because even though I was doing a lot of the work, but because I was doing it at home and I was doing it like while juggling kids and cooking and cleaning and all this other stuff, I never thought of myself as contributing financially. And that gave me all sorts of terrible head trash for years about how we spent money, what I felt like I was really kind of entitled to, the guilt that I kind of internalized around all that stuff. But I never thought of myself as developing into an entrepreneur until, honestly, in the last 2 years.
That's a big mindset shift too. And you're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to be the one that's going to do all the things now. And your kids are still very young too. Like you said, you're homeschooling them. So that's going to be quite the struggle, I imagine.
It's been a struggle. I mean, it was something that was in the back of my mind for a while. I didn't know why. I mean, in hindsight, I know why I was attracted to it, because freedom is a major core value. And I remember putting my oldest in kindergarten. And so in the state of Texas, kindergarten is not required. You do not have to send your kids to kindergarten. You could send them straight to first grade with no kindergarten, right? Most people send their kids to kindergarten. You just don't have to do it. So I enroll my oldest, who is now 9. I put her in kindergarten. And she missed like 3 days, I think, within a 9-week grading period. One of those days, I don't even think she actually missed. I think she was just late, because we were doing a little fundraiser for hurricane supplies when a hurricane hit North Carolina. We had some friends up there. So she stuck around and helped like load up a trailer and, you know, saw my husband off to go deliver these hurricane supplies and went to school late. No big deal, right? I got a letter from the school truancy officer in kindergarten. And I just wanted to write back and be like, you know that this isn't required. Like, why are you threatening me? Like, how weird is this? It's kindergarten and it's not required, but yet I'm in trouble because she was gone for 2.5 days. Like, it's very arbitrary and strange. And I don't like answering to other people. It doesn't sit well with me. So I think that's why there was always kind of this seed of interest in the back of my head. And, you know, once a couple things kind of snowballed in like kindergarten, first grade, culminating in all the COVID stuff, closing the schools, making it so weird and just unnatural for kids. I mean, they required masks up until literally what it was like 8-10 weeks ago. They dropped it for the State of the Union address. Finally, Houston Independent School District was like, oh shit, I guess we got to get rid of masks too. If Congress doesn't have to wear them anymore, I guess we'll let our 6-year-olds not wear them. So, I mean, we pulled the kids out of school. We didn't have a plan in place. I was like, we'll just figure it out. And, you know, where I am with it right now is I think sometimes, you know, you can maybe relate to this. We have a tendency to take on all the things.
Yep.
And that's what I did. I'm like, I will figure out a way to make it work. And I did. That's not to say that I figured out a way to make it work really well or in a way that's like incredibly fulfilling, because I don't have dreams to be an elementary school teacher. Like, that's just not a goal or an aspiration of mine. And I have now a 5-year-old boy that I've got to start making some decisions about like kindergarten stuff for him. And the last thing I want to do is to like wrestle him at the kitchen table and teach him his letters.
Yep.
Right. Sounds... like, cause he's just like dirt and snails and anything collecting rocks. That's what he needs to be doing right now, right? Like, I just don't want to have that be my relationship with the kids all the time. So I've come to realize that means that I just need to hire somebody. I don't want to send them back to school, but I do need to acknowledge when I'm over my head. And with that on my plate and trying to do the other things, you know, you end up kind of half-assing multiple things, and that's not how I want to do it. So it needs to be just one of those things that I outsource.
Right. And that is, I feel like it's so tough for women in general to outsource things, especially you talk about in your book, outsourcing just the housekeeping things, like, you know, washing dishes or just having a, you know, maid come once a week. Like, I don't know why that is such a struggle for us.
It is. Yep. And I think everybody struggles with that to some extent, you know, regardless of whether you're working or you're at home with kids or you're doing both. It's a struggle.
You got to let some stuff go. All ladies out there, let some things go. Take some things off your plate. There's always something. And people can do it just as good as you. I feel like that's a big thing that we always think.
Or
you
know? Better.
Or better, right? People can do it better. Especially if you've been doing the same thing for a long time, as like a new perspective on it. Can save you a lot.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think about like, how am I going to scrub my shower? Like, I'm going to half-ass that because I'm not doing it like with passion. But I've got some ladies that will come in here and like, they clean like it fulfills them. Like, they mean it, right? Like, they actually derive joy from like coming in, something's dirty, and like they can see it like become clean in front of them. Like, that does not speak to me. I am just like, good and done. I'm angry about this. Look at the mess you made. Like, does not add any value to my life at all for me to do that.
For real. But like you said, yeah, there are people out there that are like, this is what I love to do. Transformations, you know.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about your coaching. So I know you coach women.
So what I do, the kind of the bulk of what I do is group coaching. It's a little bit different than what's kind of traditionally you run into in the health and fitness space. And it's a combination of, you know, kind of my 11 years owning a gym, seeing kind of what worked, what didn't work, and my experience. Like as a woman who's had 4 kids, gaining the weight, trying to lose the weight, trying to, you know, feeling that pressure of looking like somebody who owns a gym and not like settling into that, you know, 20, 30 pound chubbier version of myself. That was really, really difficult to kind of live through and navigate, but gave me valuable lessons that I've now kind of put in place with coaching. So for that reason, I only work with women, right? Like I speak the language. I know the struggles. I know what we tell ourselves we can and cannot do. I know how those stories work. And I kind of coach like on a pyramid. So like the biggest part, that base of the pyramid is all mindset. The next most important part is nutrition. And then just the small triangle, the tip of that pyramid, is the movement part, right? Unless you're training for, you know, a bikini competition or bodybuilding competition, or, you know, to be a professional athlete, compete in some way, what you're doing doesn't make that much difference. My goal is for people to find a way to move their body that like makes them proud of what their body can do. That's going to encourage general health and longevity. Right. So in my experience, most of the time when we as women want to kind of like lose some weight and we get motivated to do that, we flip that pyramid upside down. Right. So we don't start with that big part at the bottom. We start with the movement, which is where we get like the smallest ROI. Because is it easier in the course of your day to like overconsume, you know, 500 calories, or like, is it easier to burn those 500 calories by running? But we take this crazy attitude that we're going to strap on these tennis shoes and like you hit the Stairmaster all day long. And then now like you're going to be skinny, right? You're going to do that for a couple of weeks and you're going to be like ready for your vacation or whatever it is that, you know, you have in mind. Maybe if they're super motivated, then they'll go on to the next level and they'll scratch the surface of nutrition. But also most of the time that ends up being diet stuff. Right. So where we get kind of stuck in that yo-yo, we'll set a goal. I want to lose 20 pounds. I know somebody who did keto and they lost 20 pounds. So now I'm going to do keto, knowing full well that like they're not cutting out carbs forever. Right. So are you really learning? Are you teaching yourself and acquiring any long-term habits that are going to keep that 20 pounds off? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Nobody ever gets up to the mindset level. So that's why I flip it, because I say that, you know, no amount of excessive cardio or kale salads are going to plug those mindset gaps, right? And if you've got the mindset gaps, we are continuously going kind of all or nothing. Like everything has to be perfect. I screwed up today. So like my diet's shot, right? Like this, I'll give away my age here. When you grow up in like the 80s and 90s, that was all like diet culture. And I think a lot of us kind of witnessed our moms back in those days, like kind of starve themselves, stick to their diet, you know, whatever the diet was. And then they'd be like, oh, my diet's ruined. And then they would just go ham on, yeah, on something, right? Like we didn't get a lot of really good lessons in how to fuel our body. So now we've reached adulthood, right? We struggle with all these other things that go on as women, like childbirth and breastfeeding, the entire, you know, postpartum phase of life, like menopause, Hashimoto's, PCOS, all of these things that are uniquely female issues. And we don't have a good way of, you know, kind of treating those things and managing those things with the nutrition and also being able to fuel ourselves so that like we like what we see when we look in the mirror, right? We feel empowered. We feel good and confident in our own skin. Because when we don't feel good and confident, the ripple effects are huge. I mean, and how does it affect your relationship? How does it affect how you show up, how involved you are with your kids, right? Like, are you getting in the pool and playing with them in the summer, but like you don't want to take your shirt off or something? So Like, you're missing out on experiences, and there's just not any reason for it, right? A lot of the time, I think we look at it and we think that we should know what to do. But I mean, hell, I was a gym owner for years struggling with this, knowing deep down that I was kind of eating like an asshole, right? And I did not figure that out for myself even until it took me probably 5 or 6 years. Once I figured out the nutrition side of things and then really started to get results. But we don't know what we don't know, right? And like, that's the beauty of when you hire a coach, you get to compress that time, right? Like, I worked for years to get results that I couldn't get on my own. First time I hired a coach, bam. Like, that's how it works.
Yeah, for real. It's like, you can just skip that whole thing of trial and error. Just, this person's going to already do all the research for me for the last couple of years. Yeah, it's definitely super impactful to actually have somebody who knows what they're doing. And nutrition is just insane. Like, if you Google anything, like, you get all these crazy diets, and like, everybody says different things. If some people say, you know, eat whole wheat, some people say, you know, gluten's the devil. There's so many different things. I don't know. I still don't know, like, what works for me. I still need to take an allergy test, honestly. That's what my big thing is, and figure out what works and what does not work for me.
I've never done one of those. I think I just don't want to know if I'm allergic to stuff.
I think I am. That's why I was like, I feel like I need to start doing that. But yeah. Nutrition is a whole thing. Yeah.
it's a whole thing. That is well said.
So some of your biggest setbacks or struggles that you've overcome.
I honestly think the biggest setback was also the biggest gift in my life. And that was kind of reaching rock bottom in my marriage. Realizing that, you know, I felt like my husband had kind of given up for a while. Like, he wasn't really trying. And I felt like I was still really trying for both of us. Then we reached a point and I realized that, like, I had stopped trying too, which honestly kind of scared the shit out of me, because I was like, whoa, if I'm not trying anymore, he's definitely not trying. Like, who's going to drag this thing across the finish line? And what does this mean for me? Like, are we going to get divorced now? Are we going to wait until, like, our youngest is 18 and then get divorced and be one of those couples? Like, what does this look like? I've been out of the workforce now for a long time, right? I haven't earned any of my own money, quote unquote. So, like, who's going to hire me? Am I going to, like, live in an apartment with these four kids and be a single mom? Like, what do holidays look like? I had all of these just, like, ideas kind of, you know, I was drowning in them. And that experience and getting to that point led me to take control of my life in a way that I never had prior to that. So at the time, it was really difficult to navigate, right? To figure out how the hell are we going to dig ourselves out of this hole? We're like, we don't even really like each other. We don't know how to talk to each other, like, without arguing. And like, every stupid thing had to be an argument. It didn't feel like we were on the same team. Like, how do we get back on the same team again? And I realized, you know, I'd been dishing out all of this advice, right? I meant, well, like, hey, can you do X, Y, and Z? Because that would really, like, make me feel loved, or it would make me feel better. It would make me feel more supported. But I had been dropping the ball on, like, working to fill my own cup, right? Always expecting him to show up and fill my cup for me. And it wasn't his job. So I was dropping the ball and filling my own cup. I was dropping the ball and growing, right? Developing as an individual, reminding myself, like, who Kirsten was, not who mom is or who the wife is or who the housekeeper is, but like, who am I and what am I doing to get better? How am I showing up for everybody? And half the time I was sitting around, not showing up, but like, sitting there in my own pity party because no one was showing up for me. So I think that experience really taught me that, like, it wasn't my job to worry about how anybody else is showing up, right? I focused inward and I knew I had to get my own shit together, right? I didn't have any good habits. I wasn't going to the gym regularly. I wasn't eating a healthy diet. I wasn't waking up at the same time every morning, right? My kids were waking me up in the morning. I was hastily pouring, you know, cereal and milk for them. My hair was on fire. I'm just responding and reacting all day long. And I was miserable. But part of the reason for that was that I was not taking the responsibility that I needed to take for my own life. I wasn't creating boundaries for myself. I wasn't respecting like my talents and my vision and my goals and my purpose, any of that stuff. But I was expecting somebody else I lived with to respect all those things for me.
Ooh, I love that. Exactly. You have to put yourself first. You have to respect yourself first before anybody else will respect you. So what tips do you have for women who are stuck in a rut, who just don't know what to do?
To be honest, this is kind of why my area is the fitness space. Because I think when you're really stuck in that rut, when you kind of forget who you are, you lose that sense of identity, you don't know how to do things for yourself anymore. That low-hanging fruit of like, I'm going to take a 30-minute walk. Right? We're going to work on just carving out 30 minutes to myself. So when I started doing that, I had to actually join. I own a gym over here. I had to join another gym that had childcare so that I didn't have any excuse. And I wasn't relying on somebody else to make the time and the space for me to get away. Right. I was completely in control from like A to Z of the whole process. So I had a coach writing me programming. I had a gym membership, childcare was provided. I would go and I would drop my kids off. And there were a lot of times that I would sit in my car and I would just scroll Facebook, Instagram. And, you know, maybe a baby was asleep in the backseat and I didn't want to wake her up. Excuse. But I still took that, like, you know, 30 minutes to an hour, whatever the time was at that point. I still took that time for myself. I started making that a habit, even if I didn't even go in the gym. Then gradually I dropped the kids off at childcare and I would just kind of sit in the lobby by the little check-in desk, sit in a chair, scroll on my phone. Again, like I needed the peace and quiet. I needed a little bit of solitude because I wasn't getting it any other time. And then I got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm here scrolling my phone. Nothing really new going on Facebook. I'm already at the gym. I might as well just do this workout, right? And it built upon itself. It doesn't happen overnight. So I'm a big fan of using micro goals and stacking those micro goals to build these habits over time. Because we look at people and it's easy to be like, oh, that person's really disciplined or they're really motivated. But that's not what it is, right? Anybody can do that, but it's an acquired skill. And you've got to figure out what it is that you want, have a vision for yourself and who you want to be, then figure out how to become that person, right? How does that person behave? If you've got a vision of yourself, like the best version of you, and that person is fit and in shape, well, then obviously they probably are intentional about what they eat, right? They probably prioritize their time so that they can exercise. So figuring out how to set those kind of small goals for yourself again is one of the best ways to kind of let that spread. Because when I was in a place I didn't know how to set goals for myself, that's exactly the route that I took, right? I didn't know what I wanted in life. I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. I just felt like I was kind of drifting along every day. But being able to get that little shred of space, being able to take a little bit of time, pay myself first with my time, do something good for me. I started actually following through on something that I said mattered. And what that did for me was start to build self-confidence again, because self-confidence is really just the trust that you have in yourself. We think about how we interact with other people, right? Like if we have a time to record this podcast, and like you know, show me, I'll be like, oh, well, Bree's flaky. She's like totally made an appointment and then like didn't show up. But we do that with ourselves all the time. And we judge ourselves by our intentions, right? I didn't show up. I told myself I was going to go to the gym. I told myself I was going to do X, Y, or Z. we don't show up because I got really busy with the kids, or this meeting ran late, or traffic was bad. I just didn't feel like it. My head kind of hurts, whatever the excuse might be. But realistically, we are undermining the trust and the confidence that we have in ourselves, which is unbelievably detrimental if you do that long enough. So yeah. I think when you're stuck in that rut, you find a small way that you can start to build that confidence again.
And 75 Hard is great for that. The Live Hard program is, I think that's the whole point, is to build self-confidence yourself and also hold yourself accountable. And, you know, if you mess up something, you have to start over, you know, and that's definitely a big thing. It's like, oh, I have to have that, you know, integrity with myself too.
I know. Yeah. I failed on day 72 because I forgot to take a progress picture once. That was rough.
That is the worst. I think I did 70 days of like phase one because I kept like messing up and I was like, ah, I must have been day like 28. And I was like, I have to take 28 more cold showers or 30 more cold showers on top of this. Like, why did I do this to myself?
Oh, that's bad. Yeah. I was not screwing up phase one at all. I had like so many backup reminders and alarms on my phone. I was like, I can't do one day more of these cold showers.
Yeah, they're not fun. They're not fun. But yeah, that's definitely something that really helped me build that trust in myself as the Live Hard program.
And the ability to know that like you can do hard things. It's okay.
Right? It's a badge of honor, you know, like we finished 75 hard.
And I will say that my failure on day 72, that was probably one of the biggest learning opportunities for me and how I changed my perspective on failure. Because I used to think that like, if I set a goal, in this case, my goal is to finish 75 hard, right? Complete that program. It's over here on this side, far opposite side is failing at it, right? And I'm kind of in the middle. So if I accomplish my goal, I move one direction. If I fail, I move the other direction, which is really, really far away from where I already am. But what I realized was here I am on day 73 and I wake up and I realize I forgot that damn picture. I had to come to terms with being honest with myself, right? Can't fake it. Got to start over again. And I went, I took another progress picture that day. And I realized, you know what? I can see my abs. I was a year out from having my fourth kid. I was like 36 years old, four kids. And I was like ripped. I said, this is not a failure. Like, why did I think that this was such a bad thing? Am I better off because I tried this and I failed it? Hell yeah. Like all day, every day. I am a million times better off in life. The lessons that I have learned over the last 72 days, like the changes in my body, the discipline that I have instituted, how good I feel, like my reliance on alcohol went away because I was able to go to social events and have fun and realize I could still have fun like without drinking. So I realized that like the way I had conceptualized failure was completely wrong. That your path to success, inevitably failures are on that path, right? Like it's paved with a whole bunch of failures. When you try something and you work towards that path to get to your goal, to whatever success means to you, and you fail, you didn't move farther away from your goal at all. You're closer. Like, can you just get up, brush off, learn the lesson, and then continue to work down that path? Because if so, like that's your bread and butter right there. And that made such a huge, huge difference for me.
Right. Failure, it just brings you closer to your goals. Yeah. That's a really hard thing to like actually grasp too. I feel like when you're in the thick of it.
Yep. And I did it again. I waited, I don't know, maybe a year, something like that. But it allowed me to really embrace failure in a way that I had not previously leaned into it.
I love that. That's awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much for being here today. What is your favorite book?
Ooh, my favorite book. I would say, so I'm kind of like a raging libertarian. And I really like the book Anatomy of the State. So it's just really short. And I will say I listen to it occasionally at the gym as an audiobook. I'm like such a nerd. I can't believe I'm sharing this out loud. But I did like PR on my bench press last time I was listening to Anatomy of the State. So it gets me pretty riled up. Most of my books, I think, that I really, really like are, you know, something like Atlas Shrugged, Anatomy of the State, stuff like that. I will say I recently, after we went to Women of Apex, bought the book Loving What Is by Byron Katie.
No, oh, I bought it. I haven't read it yet.
So good. So good. I've been using that like on an almost daily basis, kind of working through her whole, when you have a thought, write it down, ask more questions, turn it around. I've used it with clients, used it at a retreat that I helped out with a couple weeks ago. It was a women's retreat. And it's just been a phenomenal, phenomenal tool. So in the last, I guess, month now, that has been my most recommended book, I think.
All right. Awesome. Anatomy of the State and Loving What Is. I haven't read either of those yet. So awesome. And then your book, we had to have you on because we had two people say that your book was their favorite book.
I'm honored.
Right. It's an amazing book.
What a compliment.
Right. I know. It's really cool. It's like, and I loved it.
Thank you so much.
And then how can people connect with you?
Absolutely. So best place to connect is probably all the socials. Kirsten Smith, it's K-I-R-S-T-I-N. A lot of people misspell it. I am the Kirsten Smith on Instagram. I do have a Facebook group that is geared towards busy women and moms. So you can find me. I'd be happy to plug you in there. You can always find me at kirstensmith.com. But generally shoot me a DM on social media and that's a good way to get a hold of me.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Women in Power podcast. Please hit the subscribe and like button to see more episodes. New episodes air every Wednesday morning. So please join our Facebook group, Women in Power, for the latest updates and news about our podcast.